evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, August 16th, 2018. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Hold that date, September 22nd. Asheville will be at the Biltmore Estate with Dr. Mark Skidmore. We still have a few tickets available, so just click on Lunch with Catherine on the homepage, and I look forward to seeing you in Asheville. Rise of the Asian Consumer, please listen. I'm still working on the write-up, so we'll have, I hope to have that for you by the end of the month. I've been delayed by the travel schedule, but it's all up there in the audio, and you really need to integrate this into the big trends that we've been writing about in the wrap-up, whether it's Control 101 or Space. This is going to have a very major impact on your life. So, and it will also really help you understand the news that we're watching about China and other areas in Asia. I'm going to go to Italy in October through Amsterdam. I'll be there for a workshop that Ulrich is doing on the Keys of Enoch. I've asked her to send me the information so I can post it. So I'll be in Amsterdam October 12th and 13th. If there's anybody interested in getting together for a lunch on the, I may not leave till the 14th. So 12th, 13th, 14th of October, let me know. And then I'll head to Lake Constance and then on to Italy for the October's, the Scientists for Peace on October 19th, 21st. Our theme tonight is The Soul is the Artist of Reality, a wonderful article or new rant from John Rappaport on the American Destiny. And we're watching an issue come to the surface. You heard it last week with the wonderful discussion with Harry Blaser and Dr. Hugo de Garis. More is coming up in the Wave Genome tonight with Ulrich Groniger, a fabulous presentation. And the question is, are we going to resonate with each other in life or as spiritual and energetic beings? Or are we going to resonate with machines and be treated as if we were malleable hardware and software, a natural resource to be farmed? Again, the issue is coming to the surface. Harry and John, of course, argue for human power and an energetic and spiritual vision. Ulrich's Wave Genome goes deeply into science, very powerful information on our DNA and the nature of life, and it's really going to help you understand this issue. Money in markets. The U.S. dollar now up 5.17% for the year, not quite flying, but almost. We're watching, and this is part of huge cash flow eruptions caused by really increased competition by more people for less resources. We're seeing repatriation of capital to the U.S. as a result of the lower taxes, as a result of tariffs, as a result of sanctions, cutting your cash flow. And so we see eruptions bursting out around the globe, China, Turkey, Italy, lots of companies in the middle. And of course, even Bitcoin is experiencing it. We're now, Bitcoin now trading at 6,300. It's down from its high of almost 20,000 in December 2017, so down by more than two-thirds. It's the equivalent of the body pulling the blood back to the center, and the extremities then now grappling with how to keep the liquidity going in the face of high debt loads around the world. You know, for many years on globalization, the world has been awash in G7 central bank pumping, probably bailout missing money, and of course, China and emerging market debt growth. That's now reversing, and so again, the cash flow wars are up. Erupting, and they're going to continue. It's very much part of what I talked about in the last couple of annual wrap-ups. Controlled demolitions are here, and they're going to accelerate. Fixed income, the long treasury ETF now down 3.28%. The intermediate down 1.69%. The bond aggregate down 1.18%. Junk holding steady up 0.5%. Or returning 0.5% for the year. The the Fed bump is coming in the fall, and I think in part the fixed income market is anticipating that, but also a new article up in Money and Markets linked in the News Trends and Stories on the website. The Fed is winding down their significant mortgage securities portfolio. That's putting pressure on the mortgage market so far this year, and you're going to see more. So I think if you're thinking about taking on a mortgage, just assume that there's a greater chance interest rates going to rise than not. The Fed came out with a new study. The 2008 financial crisis, they say, cost every American $70,000. That is the lost growth impact on income of a permanent reduction in growth. Presumably does not include the $65,000 missing per person from the U.S. government. So, and Lord knows it doesn't include the cost of all sorts of negative return on investment, government spending, and behavior. So the reality is, if you look at your net worth, the U.S. government and the way it's being run over the last 20, 30 years has cost you a great deal of money. I'm sure there are people running the government that said they made you a great deal of money, too. So it's a more complicated topic. But needless to say, the financial coup has wiped out millions and millions of Americans. The equities, S&P now up 6.5% for the year. The home builders down. They're down 11.4% now. The European ETF down 5.44%. Germany down 10%. The developed markets minus North America down almost 5%. China way off its peak, down 10.9% on the large caps, down 12.27% on the small caps. That's very much impacted by Tencent coming out with a first profit drop in at least a decade is the headline. And that's quite a whack on the Chinese tech stocks, which have been very important to that market. Anyway, so, but needless to say, the trade war is taking its toll on the Chinese market. Emerging markets down 11.32%. And with China trading off, of course, you see commodities trading off. They're now down 3.57% for the year. And that's, you know, that's a turn from being in the positive, being in the black, into being in the red. Gold now down 10% for the year. Silver down 15%. Oil still holding it up 16%. Well, the missing money has come full circle, or maybe I should say it's the ultimate in circular thinking. The Federal Financial Standards Board has come out with a policy statement. This was brought to Dr. Skidmore's attention and then my attention by an article by the Federation of American Scientists, and I have to put in a plug for them. They've done a very good job of following government transparency and government finances. Really a group to, if you're looking for groups to support, they're one of them. So the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board has now come out with a policy statement basically saying, let me just read it to you. In an apparent departure from generally accepted accounting principles, federal agencies will be permitted to publish financial statements that are altered so as to protect information on classified spending from disclosure. The new policy was developed by the government's Financial Accounting Standards Advisory Board in response to concerns raised by the Department of Defense and others that a rigorous audit of agency financial statements could lead to unauthorized disclosure of classified information. So here we go. $21 trillion missing. The response to that is, oh, don't worry, we're doing an audit. Well, now it turns out the audit is permitted to have cooked books. So how does that relate? Now, interestingly enough, all of the article is both up on the website, and a great deal of it is in the notes. Believe it or not, the Department of the Pentagon's Office of the Inspector General had a sharply dissenting view on this. You have to read the notes on this. It's very funny. They basically said that the financial statements would be the equivalent of meaningless. So let me read some quotes from this. And the board came back and said as follows. You ready for this? in response to the dissents from the Inspector General, without this statement, i.e. without the ability to classify selected accounts, there is a risk that reporting entities may need to classify their entire financial statements to comply with existing accounting standards, which would likely result in the need to classify a large portion of the government-wide financial statements. What they're saying is that if you don't cook the books, then you have to redact the entire financial statements of the U.S. government, which means, you're ready for this, they're totally meaningless. Okay. The new accounting standards is expected to be approved by the sponsors, namely the Secretary of the Treasury, the Comptroller General, and the Director of the Office of Management and Budget by the end of a 90-day review period in October. Okay. We've now entered into a never-never land where the federal accounts are now officially meaningless. Now, they've been that way for a while, but it's amazing to watch them go through the hoopla to basically integrate all of this. So my guess, you know, I think there were, as you know, I think it was a big meeting at the Bohemian Grove, but I think one of the serious talks were, how are they going to deal with this financial, the financial management laws at the federal government and the accounts. This is the next step after the latest Inspector General report being redacted. It looks like the Inspector General forced the classified guys to basically, you know, he wouldn't cook the statement, and so they had to redact the whole thing. And I think what they're saying here is, you know, the same thing is going to happen on the entire DOD financial statements, and then it's going to ripple through to the federal government. To the entire government-wide statements. I think the other thing is, you know, that happened at the Grove, and I'll just say it again, is I think the California fires are a way of clearing the necessary land to do a Silicon Valley North. And I think the Make America Great Again plan has significant insourcing, not just of companies and operations, but massive amounts of highly qualified professionals coming in from primarily Asia. So that means a lot of acreage is going to be needed. So far, we've seen last year 500,000 acres burn in California, another 300,000 so far this year. That's 800,000. So wouldn't surprise me if that number hits more than a million before the end of the year. So look at a great deal of resources to be brought back, capital, talent, operations, and don't for a second underestimate the potential that Make America Great Again could, in fact, work if you look at what I think is happening covertly to make sure that the national security state is very much sourced from operations and depends on operations inside of North America. But between the pivot to Fortress America and what's happening with the finances, we're basically talking about a national security state which is free to tax and offer no conformity with the financial management laws and essentially no financial transparency, not just because of this new promulgation, but because of the national security waivers as well. All the defense contractors can receive waivers from the national security state and the national security czar, the intelligence czar, to not comply with SEC or other laws related to reporting their finances. So the government is free to cook its books, and all the companies that work for it are free to cook their books. And that's it. Out of control. There's been additional writing in the Swamp Drama about why the FBI let the Clintons skate on the email and other investigations, particularly before the election was over. In my opinion, as we continue to watch what's happening with the missing money story, as well as what's happening with the Clinton Foundation investigations and what's coming out, I truly believe the Clintons were laundering money very much for the CIA or with the CIA and the Department of Justice. And if the Clintons are working for the Department of Justice, how in the world are they going to prosecute them for doing what the Department of Justice and CIA are ordering them to do. You can't launder the $21 trillion out of the U.S. government without the DOJ being in charge or very much in the lead of helping make that possible, which raises the question. There's allegations that the DOJ 757 airplane has taken two trips to Arkansas to pick up files. The question, speculation being, is that files from the Clinton Foundation? It wouldn't surprise me if they're just picking up all the documentation that tells them where the $21 trillion is. Don't think they're getting back the money. If anything, they're asserting tighter control over their money laundering operation. One of my questions, of course, and I said it last week, is to what extent does it reflect intelligence shared between Putin and Trump when they met in Helsinki? Because I think Putin knows a great deal about where all that money is and was probably, given the Russian positions in the U.S. housing market, was probably the Russians were very thick in the whole operation, one way or the other, and certainly have good intelligence. As I said, everywhere you look, there's a fight for cash, and the biggest fight for cash, the most important fight for cash in terms of impact for your finances is is Washington fighting to preserve their reserve currency status. What that means to you is inflation. The more the dollar's position erodes, the more danger there is that dollars are going to come back to this country, the more the currency is going to debase. That's part of the $21 trillion story. It's the part that Rob Kirby has talked so eloquently about. What's the danger when that money continues or starts to circulate? Not surprisingly, we see the president now sign the Foreign Investment Risk Review Modernization Act, which basically further limits the ability of foreign investment in strategic operations here in the United States without approval from Washington. So basically, the national security state wants to make sure not only it's Fortress America, but that it owns and controls anything important within Fortress America. And it's what happens when a major portion of economy runs through the central government, and that central government depends on the military for its financial solvency. Needless to say, between sanctions and trade wars, and now more sort of assertion into the political process, the number of scupper deals canceled for political reasons mostly, has now hit $540 billion. That's a huge number of canceled deals. We still see high deal doing, but the consolidation, the centralization continues, but it's clearly a much more treacherous environment for the corporations in between the warring. I wanted to go through a series of stories that I think are worth noting and important, so I just want to bring them to your attention. One is the World Bank has announced they're issuing blockchains bonds with something called BondEye. Part of it is a clever twist on words. There's a BondEye neighborhood, very famous in Australia, where Jason Bowden-Smith originally hails from, and it reflects the fact that they're using an Australian bank to do the deal. But if they are successful with getting blockchain to really work as their clearing agent on a issuance of bond, it's going to be an important prototype. We saw quite a story in hullabaloo from a plane stolen from the Seattle airport. The QAnon hope porn had a reference to it and with a reference to the word missile. I think it's a legitimate question because there was something there are many different strange things. The person who stole the airplane can't fly, first of all, but somehow apparently managed to get the plane in the air and do some remarkable feats, acrobatic feats with the plane. And you really have to ask the question to what extent the plane was remote controlled. But you wonder, who was threatened. And the other question was the plane shot down. it was, to me, it's a reminder, if you look at all the various people living, even though the plane went south of Seattle, if you look at who lives in that area, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates, it wouldn't surprise me if it's a reminder that we, the Air Force, control what's really going on. And if you want to be safe in your houses in the Seattle or any area in America, you're ultimately depending on the U.S. military and the U.S. Air Force. Vatican scandals. We continue to see multiple headlines about pedophilia scandals all around the world. Washington, Philadelphia, Australia, but all around the world. I've talked about this in previous Solaria reports. I see pedophilia networks that were essentially political networks, control file networks, personnel benefit networks, that were collaborations between a variety of power groups, of which the Vatican was one. The blame is clearly being moved in terms of media coverage and some legal action. It's very much being hung on the Vatican alone. It's quite a power shift, and don't think it's not related to the different fight over resources and control of resources and the cash flow wars and hiccuping interruptions that are breaking out around the world. But Philadelphia grand jury did issue an 800 plus page report. I haven't looked at it, but given all the litigation that's going on against the Vatican for pedophilia in Philadelphia, it wouldn't surprise me if it was quite informative. It relates to over 300 cases of abuse just from looking at the headlines. Anyway, so that's a pretty significant effort for a grand jury to produce a 800-plus page report on 300-plus cases. So I think the Vatican's got its handful for quite a while, and this is going to come at a very significant political cost. Alex Jones, as we know, as we discussed last week, has been censored by Facebook, Google, YouTube, some of the other social media, and apparently the reports are his web stats are going up, 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 as are his newsletter signups. The reality is, I think that social media is going to become more and more a vehicle of censorship. I always believed it was created for that reason. It's a tool of control, both surveillance and control. And the reality is we're just going to have to go find other vehicles. And it's funny, I'm here with in Brittany, France, with my great ally, Alistair Thompson, who's the former publisher of Scoop, and he keeps arguing I should get on Facebook. And I just said, look, you know, if I get on Facebook, then I start to depend on, I invest a lot of time and effort and depend on Facebook, and they're just going to pull the rug out from me at the worst possible moment. You have to build on things that last, or else you won't last. If you read my prayer books, that's a quote from one of my favorite sermons. You have to build on things that last. You can't build on things that don't last. You can't build on things that don't have integrity. So I have no interest in building on things that don't have any chance of integrity, although there's no doubt I use the internet, and therefore I use digital systems. And I, at this point, I have to say the digital systems and the internet in the United States, I don't believe have integrity. So exception to my rule, because that's how I can reach you. FDIC insurance, I got a great question about a month ago, and I've already answered it, but I want to emphasize this. FDIC insurance, if you look at how it's performing, it's not what it used to be. You really need to make sure that you have a very strong bank. That means hopefully no derivatives, no big trading that presents a conflict of interest. You want a bank whose primary business is focused entirely on serving the retail customer. They have a solid business and solid relationships in the community that they operate. I hope it's local and well-capitalized, or if you can't have local, have regional and well-capitalized. It has strong and deep management. That means it has the ability to work through just about any kind of crisis, recession, financial crisis, on and on and on, political problems. Anyway, if you want help with the doing a search for a good local bank, check out the Bank Intimate at Solari, or just do a search for Bank Local or Bank Intimate at Solari.com, and you should be able to find it. I'll ask the team to put the link up in the subscriber links. Housing market, the probability is, given all of the different things we've discussed about rebuilding Fortress America, or if you want to call it Make America Great Again, we're seeing repatriation of capital, repatriation of operations, and with it, I think, is going to be very high immigration of professionals. All of that means in anywhere where the economy is growing, particularly for Global 3.0, you're going to see very strong housing markets. That's going to be the trend. The trend is inflationary. And again, the reserve currency, the more the dollar's under pressure, the more dollar's coming back. So if you are in the market for a house, if you're in an area where the 3.0 economy is strong, remember, first, that's going to be California as things move back from Asia, but it's going to spread in the heartland. I would expect the high probability would be inflationary for the housing market, so be careful. If you're looking to buy in a 3.0 area, you may not want to wait. Our hero this week is Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, who died this week. 73 hit records, 18 Grammys. She was my favorite in high school. She was my favorite in college. She was my favorite all along until pretty much she's still a favorite. When neural networks first came out on the internet, you would put in the, for the music ones, you'd put in the names of the people you like, and then they tell you who the people who also liked what you liked. And I was asked for my five favorite musicians. I said Aretha Franklin, Tina Turner, Bach, Vivaldi, and Handel. And the neural network came back, I'll never forget, and said nobody liked what I liked. Anyway, I listened to Aretha Franklin working out. I listened to her road tripping. I listened to her cleaning the house. And I think we all should say a prayer for Aretha Franklin and her family and give thanks for incredible, incredible creations and joy and generosity and value that she gave to her community, to her country, and to the entire global population. So, Aretha Franklin, go with God and with our thanks and with our blessings. Until Tuesday, our hero was going to be Brazilian surfer Rodrigo Coxa, who just last year broke the record for the riding the biggest wave ever. It's up on my Twitter feed. It's an unbelievable video. I took one look at it and posted it saying, I'm impressed. Let's go to the movies. Our movie is a video that Ulrich stressed so strongly in her presentation that we watched that I felt it was very important to emphasize it, and I thought by making it the movie for Let's Go to the Movies that I would do that. It's David Tong's presentation to the Royal Institution of Great Britain. It's called Quantum Fields, the Real Building Blocks of the Universe. And it very much dovetails with what Ulrich is saying. And again, another strong recommendation for it. It's a lot of content to digest, but it's so important. And it really, along with this great, great work by Ulrich, it's so paradigm shifting. You know, I think of myself as someone who really digs to try and find important information that's not available in the mainstream media. But wow, I just kept hearing Ulrich describe one scientific research study publication after another and saying, how come I didn't know about this? How come I didn't know about this? Now, it very much dovetails and aligns with what I believe spiritually or energetically, but I believe it by intuitive means. I'm not used to seeing very highly experienced scientists come in with research that very much supports and aligns my basic feelings about how reality works. Anyway, so this is some very powerful information. Her video is about an hour and 45 minutes long. I'm I just strongly recommend that you watch the video. I think it's also dovetails nicely with Harry's, the video we made of Harry's section on the artificial intelligence last week. And a lot of what I've been talking about fields and how fields work. Anyway, so Wave Genome is the name of the presentation, and it's really about the holographic nature of our DNA. And I would strongly recommend that you listen to it. I would take the time, if you have to listen to the audio because you're listening in your commutes, I understand. But if there's any way you can watch the video, I think it's very helpful to see it in video form. Okay, ask Catherine. Can you please lend any insight when a reset is likely, what exactly this means, and how to best prepare for it and update this on a regular monthly basis? What a reset relates to is the resetting of global currencies and global debt to realign an economy that's been bubbled significantly. So a reset is one possible way that the global financial system will recalibrate, particularly if they come out with a global currency, but it's not a 100% chance that we'll get a reset, but it's one of the scenarios of what could be happening. So the question is, how do you best prepare? The first thing you need is the one value that can't be tampered with is the value that you have in your body, in your head. So for heaven's sakes, make sure you're healthy. A reset, there's so many different ways it could happen, and there's so many things that could happen. And the best way you can be prepared to deal with that is to be in a position to rock and roll, and that means you need to be strong and you need to be healthy. The second thing is you need to associate with people. Okay, next question. So, as a question about housing prices and housing speculation, which I don't quite really understand. But let me just repeat again what I said earlier, which is the pressures on the housing market are definitely inflationary. So we have capital repatriation, tax cuts, immigration, weakness in the dollar, even though the dollar's up. So Christian has integrity, your plumber has integrity. You need to surround yourself with people who can maintain competency and ethics, even in a very rock and roll environment. The third thing is you need to be useful to the people around you, whether it's your neighbors or your network. You need to add value continuously to the to those who you're in association with. And because any business that can cash flow, whether it's income or barter, is going to be the most valuable thing to have in a reset. And that means skills. So you want to have relevant skills when a reset comes. If you look at the people who've been concerned about resets for the last 10 years, they're busy running around learning how to do, whether it's to do more for themselves or to take more control of their income and their sources of income. As I said earlier, you want it. So you continue with your question. Please consider the following. How do we protect our savings in a reset? The first thing you do is you have a solid bank. It's well capitalized. No derivatives or conflict of interest businesses, big trading businesses. It's got a sound banking business. It has integrity. It has solid management. I would certainly always have, if you can, a cash position outside of the banking system as well. Will the value of cash accounts be significantly reduced? Maybe, maybe not. There are many different ways a reset could happen, and you could drive yourself crazy trying to envision all the possible scenarios. But I would make sure I had liquidity from, you know, plenty. I always try and keep 3 months of food around, so I try and keep food around, but you want to have cash. And you want to have coins, obviously. So whether it's food, cash, or coins, you want to have plenty of provision, and you want to be able to protect that provision. And so it's to the extent that you can be around other people who've made the same provision for themselves, it's going to significantly. Community resiliency is going to help individual resiliency. Then the next part of your question is, are gold and silver the appropriate safe place? play, what percent should we invest in metals? As much as possible, must we take physical possession of the metals? Again, it could be. That's why I don't believe in a magic bullet. I think you want to have this and that and this and that and this and that. And what you need is a balance of strategies. And so I love gold and silver. To me, they're central banking insurance. And in many kinds of resets, they will be exceptionally valuable. But remember, they can be confiscated and they can be stolen depending on where you deposit them. Who are reliable sources to purchase metals from, and is it safe to have them to store the metals? I never deposit where I buy, with the exception of some Swiss banks. Generally, my preference is to store separately from where you purchase. Again, there are some exceptions. And you ask, would major brokerages be reliable to purchase metals and store them? Generally, the brokerage businesses don't do that or don't do that well. So I would tend to buy from a dealer and again, deposit separately. What is better, bars or coins, and what coins should be considered? I should just say, when it comes to storage and depositing, or the difference between bars and coins in different situations, we have extensive precious metals Solari reports in the archive, and you can go back and you have to go into the library, but there's significant information about all of this. What you need is, for the worst case, you need liquidity, and it depends on, you know, for a person who has 2,000, the situation is different than the person who has 2 million. So what is it you need for liquidity? In most cases, it's coins, but it may be bars as well, depending if you're holding a great deal. So if you're parking lots of gold in Switzerland, you want to put it in bars because you're going to liquefy in big amounts. If you're holding it at home for the worst case, then you're going to want to have coins. So again, balance in all things. If you haven't read my Solari report commentary, it's on the website. What percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals? I would recommend it. And if you have any trouble finding it, you can go into core concepts. Just look at core concepts on the homepage. Look at that graphic and go in and you can find that and some other pieces on precious metals. Are local banks safe deposit boxes, safe places to store the metals? If it's a strong, well-capitalized bank with good governance, it's a reasonably safe place. Obviously, if the government confiscates it, then they're going to go right to your safe deposit box and get it. For most people, it's safer than at home. I've never had anybody lose gold put in a safe deposit box. I've had a lot of people lose significant gold and silver that they stored at home, whether they left it in the basement, forgot that it was there when the plumber came, and then 3 months later realized it was gone, and, you know, the plumber was long gone, and there was no way to connect the two, or they made the mistake of having it delivered to a local law firm, and the next thing you know, their house was robbed. So I think, you know, you just have to be very discerning about where you put it and who you tell. But generally, I have found the safe deposit at the banks to be safer than keeping it at home. One of the things I promised a subscriber is I do due diligence on the New Texas Depository, and I'm hoping that will also be an alternative. But there are other depositories that we've discussed in the Precious Metals Market Report, and I can get Franklin back to go through all these basics one more time. What about the gold silver mining stocks? I don't give securities advice, but if you're worried about a very significant reset, you need to remember that in a reset, it's likely to be debasing of the currency and strong for assets that hold value. So whether it's in security form or in a private equity or a personal ownership form, any stable operation that generates a cash flow, whether it's published or public or private, again, whether it's your business or a publicly traded business that will hold its value because it can generate a cash flow, or it has assets that protect you from inflation, Remember, the prices may be volatile, but over time you'll hold your value. You have a better chance of holding your value. Again, no magic bullets. I'm a great believer in a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Where are interest rates heading? They are likely headed up. I think there's very little chance of sort of hyperinflation interest rates. There are a lot of pressures in terms of demographics and politics to keep interest rates down, but I definitely think they're headed higher. One of the things you ask is, what would be a good time to lock in a 10-year treasury bond? Should we ever consider a 30-year treasury bond? Here's the question. The U.S. government has demonstrated for 20 years that it is violating all the constitutional and financial management laws, and it just promulgated a policy that I talked about earlier in this report that said it reserved the right as a matter of policy to cook its books. Now, the question is, you know, you're talking about somebody who is systemically institutionalizing lawlessness. And my question is that the kind of organization you want to invest in? I'll let you answer that question. But given the speed of change in the fundamental economy and the problems in the fixed income markets, I would be exceptionally careful about what credits you accept. So this is not just an inflation issue. This is really, we're down to serious credit issues. And I think that's why, for example, you know, I talk about the top 100 landowners in the country having doubled since 2008 their land holdings. I think that's because they want to build on things that last too. So then you continue. Whatever else you think would be helpful to prepare for the reset, I'm not trying to pin you down. It's just that we value your insight and expertise to guide us through these turbulent times. Here's the thing. All of this is about probabilities. Nobody knows, one, if there will be a reset. We can continue to basically evolve the model the way we're doing it now, you know, or we can have a sort of come to Jesus reset. But it's all probabilities. So maybe we have a reset, maybe we don't. If we do have a reset, there are so many different ways it could go down. And, you know, I've read many theories on what the reset could look like, and I think they're all I just think the situation is exceptionally fluid. Here's your biggest problem in a reset. Your biggest problem is not any of the things we've discussed here far. Your biggest problem is mind control. And not just mind control of you and the people around you, but the wider community around you. Now, here's the reality. If you can keep your mind and protect your mind from mind control technology, then you can keep your money. If you can't keep your mind, then it's really easy for people to get your money. So the reality is how are you going to understand mind control technology? How are you going to protect yourself from it? How are you going to make sure the people around you have integrity and know how to protect themselves from it? That is going to be the most important thing in a reset, because if you can have a clear mind and you can associate and operate with people who also have clear minds, then you have a chance of navigating intelligently, even taking advantage of the incredible opportunities. One of my favorite quotes from Franklin Sanders is, he says, what I try to stress on people is that after the great financial global meltdown, somebody's going to wake up wanting breakfast and somebody's going to make money cooking it for them. So remember, whatever happens, life goes on. Hi, Catherine. I'm a relatively recent subscriber, so I'm not sure if you've ever talked about Cheryl Atkinson's book, The Smear, or interviewed her. My question related to her calling out astroturfing. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the nascent walkaway movement. I think Atkinson's work is excellent. If you don't know about Cheryl Atkinson, I would recommend her to you. I first learned about her through John Rappaport, who's a great Atkinson fan. He's interviewed her in his column. I invited her once after she published the book. She was not available, and I haven't tried since. But I do post some of her coverage in videos, and again, I do recommend her to you. I haven't really looked at the walkaway movement, but I think it's the right concept. I do think that shunning and withdrawing is a very, very powerful tactic. And if we support the healthy and withdraw from the not healthy, it can make an enormous difference over time. So I think the concept is a good one. I don't know. I don't have a lot of details about the actual movement itself. Okay, dear Catherine, a few times per year I spend time perusing the 13F filings for some of the so-called smart investors. If memory serves me right, Bruce Berkowitz of the Fairholme Fund tremendously profited from the 2008 financial crisis. He seemed he was all in the right stocks. And she goes on, apparently recently he's been buying a consumer products company specializing in batteries and an outdoor company specializing in ammunition. Maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I'm beginning to wonder if a power outage is some natural disaster is in our future. I think something is fishy. There is definitely deterioration in the infrastructure for a variety of reasons, so I don't think you have to be, I don't think you have to plan on a natural disaster to know that given what's going on in the country, people are going to want to, you know, have batteries, have ammunition. I mean, if you come to my house, I have a generator. I have lots of spare batteries, and I have ammunition. And it's simply resilient living, watching what's going on, whether it's Katrina or the tornadoes or the hurricanes or all the different things that we've been dealing with over the last 10 years. I just think he believes we're, you know, consumers are going to want to be more self-reliant. Now, maybe know something that we don't know. And then you say, am I reading too much Soleri? No, I think watching people like Berkowitz, what they're doing is always informative. So they're not always right, but I think it's always informative to see which trends they're picking up on. Next question is on housing prices and rental property prices as it relates to speculation, and I don't understand the question. Again, what I would stress is that prices are inflationary, and of course the inflation's going to hit in very uneven ways, because if you look at the essentially the repatriation of capital and operations and professionals, it's going to be very unevenly distributed. So it's going to hit the West Coast, but then move into the heartland, and it should be much more inflationary for the cities, particularly the cities that are prime 3.0 areas, as opposed to the rural areas that are really going to be in a much more deflationary position. And obviously there's wild cards such as a reset or recessions, but I think generally that the trend is significantly inflationary. Next question, very long one. It's all in the notes. Hi, Catherine. I would very much appreciate your help. I'm intensely interested in what seems to be happening with our atmosphere. And then this is a person who's done some pretty significant research looking into radiation levels and the danger of radiation levels in the atmosphere, and has written a blog post called California Wildfires and Nuclear Radiation. Let me just read some of it. When I purchased a commonly available radiation detector right after the Fukushima disaster in 2011, I never would have dreamed how it would impact the way I saw the world. Then he starts to test for radioactivity and finds significant amounts. Again, it's in the notes, and I would encourage you to read it. He's integrating what's happening with the wildfires, with what's happening with spraying, and then what's happening with radiation, including from Fukushima. So obviously information is very concerning. So one of the questions is he putting himself in danger for publishing on this? I think it's fine to publish and network with serious researchers as long as you're accumulating evidence and facts. I think it's very important to stay away from communicating the information with anger or repeating it a lot or engaging in high-octane speculation. That's part of the behavior that can get you into trouble about this. But obviously, we all have risks from telling the truth. But I think if you tell the truth in a highly professional manner, which is what you appear to be doing, I think it can be relatively productive. Hi, Catherine. Listening to the – oh, and I also really want to say how grateful I am that you sent this. I think it's very informative and important information about the kind of environmental pollution we're all facing. It's obviously very serious. Hi, Catherine. Listening to the most recent Money and Markets for August 9th, the Ask Catherine segment had a subscriber who asked about what industry to retrain into. I'm in a similar position working in oil and gas for the last 13 years as an electrician. Would like your opinion of finding an industry more suited to the changing times. I think that oil and gas, depending on where you are, still has a long way to go. They're big bets on, particularly on gas. So I'm not so sure that gas is going to disappear anytime soon. I do think that the prices on renewable energy are getting very attractive and coming down fast. And so being adaptable to renewable energy, including battery technology, could be very useful, as well as, looking at what 3D printing could do to impact making more of electrical systems and equipment locally. So I think learning 3D printing, playing around with 3D printing, and also being good at generator systems. I know when I put in a generator, we needed a local certification. We need somebody checking it, maintaining it. And I think there's going to be more efforts to do local energy systems just to be more resilient. So what I would say is start learning and keep learning. Take the time to learn how to expand your electrician skills to sort of outside of oil and gas if you can. What I found is always interesting is to keep following the pathway of people asking for help, whether they can pay or not, because ultimately those requests for help in question often lead to new ways of generating income. Then you continue and say, I can see myself working for the next 30 to 40 years, so looking at long-term trends would be the goal. I think the more you can expand your electrical or electrician skills to other areas, just keep building those skills and follow what people need. And don't worry if it translates into barter income. I love the story of Helen Chapman when all her money disappeared and Madoff and her litigation business dried up as an attorney at the same time. She just started helping the Madoff victims, even though they had money, and one thing led to another, and she ended up being able to engineer legislation that would help them all get tax refunds. And lo and behold, she ended up with paying customers, but just by helping people in need. Okay, that's it for this evening. August 23rd, Salier Report, an afternoon in Sofia with Thomas Meyer. I was in Sofia seeing Wagner's Ring with him. He was lecturing on Wagner's Ring. We had a great discussion after two episodes of The Ring and after his lecture. So afternoon in Sofia with Thomas Meyer. Next week, a little lighter break from two really fantastic but very mind-blowing reports, both AI and the Wave Genome tonight with Ulrich Groniger. Must listen to's, but you're ready for something lighter. Then August 30th, The Minds of Men with Aaron and Melissa Dykes. If you haven't seen The Minds of Men, fabulous documentary. I can't recommend it highly enough. And then the following week, September 6th, with Dr. Catherine Horton. We are all targeted individuals now. We're going to be talking about the targeted individual phenomenon, what it means to you and the safety and security of your family over the next 12 months. I want to think short term on this one. And then Harry and I are going to do a major discussion on privatization and my concerns about privatization and how it fits with many of the other things we've been talking about, like AI and 5G. I'm going to try and integrate it all together. So until next week, an afternoon in Sophia with Thomas Meyer. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.